Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to this episode, the first episode of the 2026-27 season, although some might argue we're not quite there yet, of Talking the Blues. George and Andy, you have both got your knotted hankies on and still sitting on the beach. How are you both?
Yeah, warm.
Warm. Maybe you need to take your hanky off, Andy.
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
How is it in Blackpool these days?
Well, no, never going to hear the place.
Okay, before we get into the Everton stuff, it's been a little bit of time since we've spoken to each other, and obviously been a little bit of time since we've spoken to everybody who listens to us. So before we get into the Everton stuff, is there anything in particular that you want to get off your chest? How you are, how the summer's been. George, I think you've had quite an active and interesting summer.
No, I don't want to talk about that. Let's talk about Everton. Let's sort the world out and then
okay.
And we can put the world right. Go on.
Okay, fair enough. So, Everton Football Club, the 2026-27 version. Is it better than the 2025-26 version? Pretty much the same or worse. Let's discuss. Andy, I think you can go first if you don't mind.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, on the face of it, there's been a couple of interesting additions to the squad during the summer. And having watched the pre-season games, I've been suitably impressed with Merlin Rolle. Who's performed well. But I think, like most Evertonians, I'm probably going to sit on the fence as to whether things are going to be better or not, because there's issues that haven't been addressed or the club has failed as yet to address. The worst one being, what on earth is going to go on at right back? Because we've had this issue now for, well, it seems like forever, but certainly 3 years. Where we've had right backs on the books and we've been playing a centre half at right back for practically the whole of last season. And if I was Jake O'Brien, I'd be getting fed up with it. I really would, because he's a centre half. He's done his best at right back. You know, he's been asked to do a job and he's done it to the best of his ability, but it's not his forte. And the club has had more than enough time for the transfer committee, the manager, and whoever else is involved in it, whatever scouting staff we've got, to have identified at least one, if not two, if not three, suitable targets. And we should have gone after them and we should have secured one of them. Not this week. We should have done it a month ago. The new right back should be on the books now, in training, in the pre-season games, getting ready to rumble on the 22nd against Crystal Palace, and we haven't done it. And to me, it's shocking. It's the way I see it, it's dereliction of duty. Every man and his dog, not just Evertonians, every man and his dog in football knows that the Everton right-back situation has been an issue for Everton and something for the other clubs to take advantage of for nigh on 3 years. And it still hasn't been resolved as we record this before the game against Newcastle on Wednesday night. It's just, I find it unacceptable. What on earth is this transfer committee and the manager doing? And what on earth are the scouting staff doing? Because it just...
As far as I understand it, Andy, they're lining up people. One, two, three. And as far as I understand it, the manager has gone, I don't think they're worth that money. Now, somebody's paid to make a decision like that.
Well...
If I'm right.
Well, whoever, be it the manager or somebody above him, can say that player's not worth that money all day long if they want to. It doesn't hide the fact that We desperately need a bona fide specialist right back, because, you know, Jake is not a specialist right back. He's filled in to the best of his ability. Evidently, no one within the club sees Nathan Patterson as the long-term solution at right back. So, you know, whether it's a right, wrong, or indifferent, you know, are they keeping Patterson as the backup?
Goodness knows, Andy.
Well, if he's going to be backup, who the hell's he backing up to? Is the problem.
Jake O'Brien, Merlin Roll, Jimmy Garner, whatever clown idea they come up with next.
Well, that's unacceptable. It's completely unacceptable.
I agree.
You know, it's like on Saturday in Stuttgart, you know, for the first time for what appears to be forever, we actually had Jake O'Brien paired at centre-back with Jared Branthwaite, and everyone thought, hallelujah, the penny's dropped. And then we lose Timur Obenham to an injury after what? I don't know, was it 15, 18 minutes, something like that? Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but Timur Obenham was playing in kind of a deep midfield role in Stuttgart.
Yeah.
And he had to go off injured. So the manager, in his wisdom, and I use those words extremely loosely and extremely lightly and probably ill-advisedly, decides that we're losing a midfielder, so I need to put a centre-half on and move a centre-half to right back. And on came Michael Keane, and Jake O'Brien moved to right back. And I'm thinking to myself, what on earth kind of cockamamie move is that? We lose a midfielder, so we put another defenceman on.
I didn't read it like that, Andy, but I didn't.
I couldn't read it any other way, bro.
The way I read the game was that first 15 minutes, Stuttgart attacked pretty exclusively down the left hand side, because the idea that Merlin Roll, a right-footed midfield defensive midfield player, is a right back is a joke. So they attacked it, and they got past him 3-4 times, and I think Moyes stood a quarter of an hour of it. And if Tim was injured, that was the excuse he needed to make the changes that he wanted to make. That's what I saw. I'm kind of with you, because there were other midfielders on the bench he could have brought on.
Well, exactly.
But they would have continued to attack somebody who's not a right back. So if you're not prepared to play the Scottish international right back you've got,
who was on the bench, by the way?
I know.
So why then, didn't he bring? You know, if Rubenham's been hurt, and we're losing from midfield, you bring Patterson on, play him at right back, and you put Roll back into the midfield role to which he's more accustomed, and you leave O'Brien and Branthwaite in the centre of the defence to continue to build the fledgling partnership that everyone who's an Evertonian is kind of hoping is going to be the new Ratcliffe and Mountfield partnership.
Couldn't agree more, Andy, but that's why we're doing a podcast and he's the manager.
Can I throw an alternative in?
Wow.
Good.
Just to be, I haven't been devil's advocate for several weeks, so I'm roaring to go here. Number of questions. First of all, does the absence of a world-class or Premier League-class right-back, how much of a material difference does that make to where the club ends up at the end of the season? And if the answer to that is it's absolutely critical that we have the best right-back that we can possibly get, then yes, we're totally negligent in not having done something about it. If the answer to that is at the margins, it probably costs us a small number of points, but there's greater priorities in the transfer window. Therefore, we'll focus on them. And if it just so happens that we come across a right back, then that fits, you know, whatever the criteria are, whatever the budget is, fits that, and then we'll go for it. That seems to me like a sort of fairly balanced argument that you can have. The second point I'd make is that perhaps Moyes, being as pragmatic as we all know that he is, thinks we're actually not going to get a new right back because either I or the transfer committee are not going to agree to somebody who is a significant upgrade on Jacob Bryan. And I get totally what you're saying about the reservations about him being right back. He's not a right back naturally. He's a centre back, and the dream centre back pairing can't happen if he's right back. But perhaps Moyes is saying if I've got limited transfer funds, and he does, then I should do as much as I can do in the inconsequential pre-season games to try and cement what my alternatives are, in the sense that if I'm forced to play Jacob Bryan at right back, then it makes more sense to give him more time at right back than it does anybody else, bringing Patterson on, who I think there's common agreement that Patterson is nobody's first choice or even second choice. So I think you can build an alternative argument to what you both said, and I'm not dismissing your arguments. I'm just saying here is the alternative argument.
I would counter one of those points. And when you suggested that not bringing in a specialist right back maybe might cost us a few points.
I'm gonna be looking further on this one. Go ahead.
Well, not having that specialist right back cost us a few points last season, and ultimately cost us European football. Now, whether we were ready for European football is neither here nor there. The fact is, we blew it. And supporters and players, and you would hope managers and senior hierarchy within an organisation would want to be playing at the highest possible level. And had we not dropped those points, and had we made even Europa Conference League, that would have given everyone a meat injection. And it probably would have helped us somewhat in the summer shopping. But we didn't. We didn't make Europe. We've not, we've, we still haven't found a right back. We're fannying around. It appears to me that we're fannying around with Johnston at Celtic. And it really wouldn't surprise me if Johnston says, "Tell you what, boys, I'll stay at Celtic." Yeah, you either want me or you don't, is what I would be thinking if I was Alistair Johnson. It's just I just find that I just find it ridiculous. I find it absolutely ridiculous when other clubs are identifying their needs and going out and doing it and getting it done, and we are faffed around for the thick end of 3 years. And to me, it's completely unacceptable. And if David Moyes is having the final say on, I don't think Alistair Johnson's worth whatever. I mean, the talk was initially that he was going to be 10 million, and then I read somewhere that Celtic were looking for 15, and that's when we appear to be thinking that Moyes is saying no, he's not worth 15, and yet. If you read the paper talk today, we're about to lash a £30 million bid at Palace for Munoz, who may or may not be a better player than Johnston at right back, just happens to be 5 or 6 years older. So, and if we are going to lash a £30 million bid at Palace for Munoz, then the argument about the shortage of funds goes out the window as well. Because at Johnston, we could possibly have for 15. International fullback, used to playing with European football. This whole right back situation for me is absolutely pivotal. on what's going on. It's a nonsense, you know. And it's become tiresome, and I get the impression that everybody's, well, the vast majority of Evertonians are sick to the back teeth of the fact that, for whatever reason, we can't identify or attract a better right back than the unlucky Patterson and the unfortunate O'Brien. The unlucky Patterson, because nobody has really given him a chance since he was signed. You could say, well, he's had chances, but he's never taken it. But has he had an extended run in the side? I don't think he has. And O'Brien, who has had an extended run in the side, he's having an extended run in the position he's clearly not suited to. He's doing his damnedest, but it's not his favourite position. It's not his preferred position. And quite honestly, if I was Jake O'Brien, I'd be sick to the back teeth of it.
There's also, you know, I'm much more on Andy's side than your devil's advocate, I think, Paul. But there's also to be taken into account, and this I think is probably the heart of the matter. The heart of the matter for me is, if you were Moisey, if we were Moisey, who would you pick at centre-half, Tarko or Jake O'Brien? And I would pick Jake O'Brien every day of the week.
Well, if Branthwaite's fit, we should be playing Branthwaite and O'Brien and letting them develop into the kind of centre-half partnership that we hope and really want them to be.
And the other point that bothers me about the right-back situation is what effect it has on the squad. Football's a team.
Yeah, it unbalances the squad, doesn't it? Because if we haven't got a specialist right back, we kind of know that Moyes will say, right, Jake, right back, Tarko, you're alongside Branthwaite. And I just think it unbalances the side, I really do.
There's no question it unbalances the side. Of course it does. What I'm talking about is what it does to the squad's confidence. They know. They played with it all last year. They all know it's a flaw in that squad. It's not been addressed, so the flaw remains. They also know how happy Jake O'Brien is or isn't about it. And that whole thing of a collective supposedly going forward is punctured by the fact that that problem has not been addressed. Never mind the one about, well, can we score 40 goals with people who miss everything that comes their way more than they ought to? You know, that's a whole different conversation. But I think, especially because Moyes is, you know, a damn decent defensive coach, the right back problem.
Well, that's up for debate as well, given the goals we've leaked in pre-season.
Yeah, but it's pre-season, isn't it? I am unashamedly playing devil's advocate here. I could turn around and say, if David Moyes turns around to the squad and says, look, in an ideal situation, yes, we would find a replacement for right back that wouldn't be Jake O'Brien. Jake could move into the centre. But look at what I've done in midfield. So, you know, we've got Roll, who looks like, you know, a really good player.
Yeah, he's developing nicely.
Yeah. And we've got Hackney, who is a defensive midfielder, although he's got more to his game. And we've got Christian Norgaard, who's just come in. And I think Norgaard will be one of those. We will look back in future years, not for the same reasons, but we'll look back and say, you know, he is like a Tim Cahill, a Pienaar type signing that has got value way beyond what we paid for him. And you could argue, if you are a total Moyes advocate, and, you know, I'm conscious that at the end of last season I wasn't a total Moyes advocate, but you could argue, if you were, that by strengthening the defensive aspects of our midfield, again, go back to the point that is getting the right back a bigger priority as maybe other aspects of the team and the squad and the formation are. Because if we have a really good defensive midfield unit, we can talk about attack in a minute, then the pressure on the right back is less.
I don't think
Exactly.
if Bournemouth's manager or Crystal Palace's manager, and you see Jake O'Brien's name, so you go, there's the weakness. Let's target that in whatever way professional footballers do that. I take your point about the midfield. Yeah, well done. Good. I'm happy with, I think there's about four too many right wingers in the club just at the moment. I'm sure he'll sort that out one way or the other without Grealish or whatever. But I think you're wrong about the right back thing, Paul. I think the ramifications of a problem that, as you said 2 years ago, is visible to everybody, not being dealt with one way and another, is a big cloud over a football team, I would think. They've got two clouds, that bunch of players. There's some really good players. There's a great goalkeeper. There's two really good centre halves. There's three or four people in midfield who can play a bit, and KDH and perhaps Grealish, but there's nothing for the opposition to fear
Well,
about.
Grealish isn't signed yet, is he?
No, but there's nothing for the opposition to fear about us banging loads of goals past them. And players know that. And I, if I were, well, we all imagine that we're all part of Everton. Get a fucking right back and stop all this natter. And don't get a Demic, but get one. If
Yeah, don't just sign anybody.
if
That's
you thought you
what I'm saying. The
were going to sign
identification and chasing, the approach work should have been done, well, should have been done 2 years ago.
well, it hasn't.
I know it's difficult to prove a negative, but where's the evidence that it hasn't been done?
We haven't signed anyone.
Because, not because
Well,
surely the club doesn't recognise the need for a right back.
no, I'm sure the club does, but
But we haven't found anybody that's an upgrade on Jacob Bryan
okay,
for the additional cost of acquiring that player.
the evidence that we don't know exists would suggest that there's either huge disagreement amongst the transfer committee, stroke scouting staff, as to who the one, two, or three prime candidates to try and attract should be. I can't believe that. I can't believe that whoever's involved in this transfer committee, including the manager, and ultimately, I guess, the CEO, because he's the one that's going to okay the big fat check whenever it gets written, cannot agree on certainly one genuine target. Because we've had umpteen names bandied around in recent weeks, the strongest of which was Johnstone at Celtic. But like I said, as far as I'm concerned, it really wouldn't surprise me if he says, "Tell you what, now you've taken too long. I'll stay here." I just find it incredible that this ongoing situation is likely to be ongoing beyond the opening day of the season.
But football, sorry, George, before you say whatever. Actually, George, you say what you want to say, and then I'll
No.
come in.
As usual. I'm on repeat now. Drop Tarkowski and then solve that problem, because the answer to dropping Tarkowski is obvious.
Yep.
But is Tarko going to be named the new club captain by the manager? And if so, that's practically going to cement him in the side.
I sincerely hope not, Andy.
Well,
with all due respect to all the people involved, who I've come to love for one reason or another, forward is O'Brien and Branthwaite.
Yeah.
And they don't get injured because at least we've got Charco and Keane, and we've got reason to be confident about them.
They should be the backups, yeah, with O'Brien and Branthwaite as the starters. They're the future. They are the future of the centre of this defence.
Yeah.
And they need to play together to build that relationship and also get used to, you know, JP needs to know who's going to be in front of him.
Well, they also need to get used to playing with whoever's playing right back, Andy.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, and left back.
I think that, you know, I mean, I said this to you last week. I think Moyes is stuck with, has happily stuck with Jake O'Brien because O'Brien is a threat and, you know, in any penalty area situation, positive or defensive, he's big and he scores and, you know, he causes trouble. So he wants him in the team and he just considers, you know, that that's the best way to get him in the team. Whether O'Brien agrees with him anymore, I'm not so sure, but what do we know? And that also is another, you know, Blinkinek.
Go ahead, bro.
No, there's just, you know, it's all... I don't really buy any of your devil's advocate arguments, elegant though they are. I think the place is a mess. I think Moyes has run out of ideas. I do think I'm not looking forward to tomorrow night because of Norgaard and hoping to see him and, you know, but I don't really feel as though we, you know, when you said to us last week, where do you think we'll finish? I think we'll finish below where we finished this year.
Really?
I do, yeah. I wish I didn't, but I do.
Okay. On what basis?
On the basis that the team, the squad, is unbalanced, knows it, is vulnerable, and can't strike back.
Okay. So, of the three points that you just made, and we can argue as to how valid each of those points are, surely the biggest point is our ability or inability to score goals.
It would certainly help, wouldn't it, if, you know, you unearthed the Rooney Lineker kid who you went, oh my God, now they're scared of us. Yes, of
so
course.
Should not the focus be, and this is the premise of my argument, should the focus not be on whoever happens to be right back? I think actually far more significant is who's going to score the goals that we need to get European qualification next season.
When you said fair play, I'll strengthen the midfield and that might help the defence. I take that point just slightly. I don't know enough about playing positions to be sure that you're right. But what would make a difference to the right back situation is watch those two dudes up front because they've got goals in them.
Yeah.
And that takes the weight off everybody and makes the whole team feel confident. I don't think that could possibly be, at the moment, a confident squad of players. They made four good chances at Stuttgart and didn't put a foot on any of them.
Mm.
And, you know, that can happen. Of course it can happen. It can happen to Rooney. It can happen to anybody. It happens too much with what we've got. And, yeah, I'd be through. Is there any sign of anybody on the horizon that you know about?
Striker wise,
yeah,
Paul? Not that I'm aware of.
Paul, you heard
no, out? No, absolutely none that I'm aware of. But it sort of goes back to my point that actually the most important thing is not necessarily how many goals we concede. How many fewer goals we concede next year as against how many goals we conceded last year because of the right back position. My biggest concern is How many more goals can we concede? How many more goals can we score next season, which,
Before.
as a result of, eliminates all the problems that we have at the back?
Doesn't eliminate all of them.
No, it would.
But it
No,
certainly increases the
but
balance of
it.
how no, but if
What
what
we
Paul
sell.
said, what Paul's saying is, if the opposition are suddenly thinking, hang on a minute, these guys have got goals in them,
Yes, of course.
then it just takes the pressure off the fact that we're still
It
fannying
does.
around at right back.
Probably because, there are better teams than us in the league who can deal with that as well.
Yeah.
But at the moment, as you've said consistently for the last 2 or 3 years, Paul, everybody knows how to play against us. Everybody knows how we'll play. We're easy. And, obviously, at times, like when we pound Chelsea at Hill Dickinson and the terrific away record last year, those things get turned on the head. But deep down that's true. We're not a scary team to play because we don't score enough.
Yeah, absolutely, George. And I don't understand why there is, with the greatest respect to both of you and almost all of the Evertonians I speak to, why the focus is on a right back. For me, if there's one thing that we need to do, we've sorted out midfield. We've got as many midfield options as you possibly would ever want now with the people that we've got there. The thing for me is, who is it that's going to score the goals? And if you're just going to rotate between Beto and Barry, we know what the answer to that is. They're going to score, I think they scored between them 16 or 17 goals last season. And that's enough to keep you up in, we're not going to get relegated if we have combination of centre forwards who scored 16, 17 goals, but we're also not going to compete in the top eight of the league if that's indeed our ambition. So, what for me, why isn't the focus on who and why and who should we have as our main sort of attacking focal point?
Well, cut to the chase, Paul. Come on. You know as well as I do that any attacker worth his salt would look at a team coached by David Moyes and go, not me, pal. I don't believe he's got a good relationship with strikers. I don't think he understands what they need or what they want. Very, very few strikers flourish under that bloke. And I hope I'm, talking shite, but
No,
I think.
I think that's a fair criticism, but it doesn't get away from the fact that is what the central need of the club is. From my point of view, we just need to be able to score more goals.
Well, go on then. How are we going to do it?
Well,
Who's going to do it? What would you do?
the Moyes approach is to have lots of contributions from other people within the club as against or sorry. Within the side, as against the person who has the sole responsibility for scoring goals. How much more effective would we be if we had a number of goal scorers who can contribute 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 goals a season, and then have somebody who can actually contribute 20 goals a season? And for me, somebody who's never been involved in football, from a coaching point, I've played a bit, but from a coaching point of view, that's the point where you start at. As Andy said before, if you've got somebody who scores goals, not only is that beneficial to you, but it affects the way the opposition play against you.
Absolutely.
So why don't we start there?
Bit late now, isn't it? We should have started there.
Well,
I mean, and the re you know, th just to be glib, the reason we're all talking about right backs is because that's what all the gossip is about, right backs, because Everton haven't put any sign out of going for anybody. Delap is the only word I've heard, and only because he can't get a game because Chelsea bought everybody else.
I have a
Neglect
look at.
the in terms of an attacker and a goal scorer, the glaring error for me this summer was, and I don't know whether we did throw our hat in the ring or whether we didn't. But if we did, then we failed miserably. And if we didn't, to me, it was a huge mistake, was not throwing our hat in the ring for Dyson Mailer, who's moved from Celtic to Ipswich for £10 million. Now, people are going to say, you know, he was playing in a Mickey Mouse league in Scotland. That argument to me doesn't hold water. The guy's a proven goal scorer, scores goals for fun. Always stepped up to the plate in the big games when they played in Europe and when they played Rangers, which we don't have a game that comes anywhere close to that in terms of intensity. And I'm including our derbies with Liverpool in that. They don't touch the sides of the intensity of an Old Firm game. And Maeda scored goals for fun. He's gone to Ipswich for £10 million. 10 million. Proven goal scorer, proven international. And what's more, he works his socks off. And if there's one thing that Moyes has always wanted, is guys who are prepared to work the socks off. And there was a guy, or there is a guy, who works his socks off and scores goals and worries other sides. And I'm telling you now, that's the biggest faux pas we have made, was not being in the market for Dyson Mailer. Because I reckon if Ipswich can give him the service he thrives on, he'll be the signing of the summer at £10 million. We talked, you, Paul, you mentioned about Norgaard being, he could be Everton's signing of the summer, and I don't dispute that. The guy's got experience. He's got, you know, he's got,
Presence.
he's got presence. Yeah. Well, for me, Maeda is the signing that we've completely missed out on. Whether we were in the ring, threw our hat in the ring or not, I've no idea. There was never any talk of it, and I honestly think that that's a huge, huge mistake. Because, you know, if people were talking about Delap from Chelsea, they were talking silly numbers. Any other forward, you know, I mean,
All right.
well, would potentially be silly money as well. But I think ultimately it probably comes back to what you said before, our kid, is that centre forwards or strikers get linked with Everton and think, nah, can't play for that manager.
If you want me to be, I mean, this is just scurrilous riffing off the top of my head. That guy's a, he wants the ball on the deck. He wants to run onto it and he wants to play the football on the deck.
Maeda,
Everton.
yeah.
Yeah. Everton, so he won't fit with Moyes' plan for Everton.
No.
The ball as long as and hope Beto and Barry do something with it. Neither of them to do it. Although Barry won more aerial challenges than most players in the league this season, it's a mere detail. What's the point? He doesn't want to play that kind of football. So
No.
he you know, A, the guy wouldn't have come. B, Moyes wouldn't want him there because he'd have to rethink it.
Yeah, he'd actually have to play football on the deck instead of hoofing,
Well,
instead of
he doesn't play
hoofball.
football, you know. I mean, and I texted you twice during the Stuttgart match. You know, long ball equals lost ball.
Yeah.
When is this penny going to drop? You know, Beto charging about, giving it the best he can. He's not a guy to play with his back to goal. He can't do it.
No.
You know, if you cast your mind back to Shearer, he loved to play with it. Do you want some physical stuff while I trap this ball? Pleasure, you know. Beto's willing enough, but they're highly developed skills. Those things, aren't they? But anyway, we seem to be in the market for nobody. So, in answer to the question about 40
Sorry,
goals, I
George.
wish you knew the answer. Go on.
We played some, albeit under version one of Moyes. We played some fantastic football
Yeah.
on the ground.
Yes, we did. Cahill, Pina.
Yeah. But it,
Arteta.
it was dependent upon the people who were in the team at the time. My position on Moyes has changed a bit. I've gone from being an absolute advocate for him to being a more, hopefully, a more balanced advocate for him. But I recognize one thing in him, that he is the ultimate pragmatist, in the sense that he takes a view as to what we can do, what we can't do, what we're best at doing, what we're not best at doing, and what is the most effective way of achieving the objective being to generate enough points or as many points as we can do throughout the season. And I don't think that's ever changed with Moyes. You can argue about whether tactics and whether the game has gone beyond his understanding of the game. And I think that's a valid argument. But I think with the squad of players that he has, and with the money that is available to him, and the influence that he still has over the transfer committee, in inverted commas, I can't believe for a second he's not doing everything that he can do
I
to
don't
get the
want.
best results. You then get to a point, and George, please come in on this. You then get to a point where you're not valuing, you're not questioning his intention, you're questioning his judgment. And has his judgment become so ineffective in the modern game that that needs to be called out? I don't know.
3 seasons ago, he won a European trophy.
Yeah,
So,
with an inferior team.
spiraling decline. And given the stuff that, well, I'll tell you what gets to me, Paul. Given what he's got, which, we're talking about strikers now, is Beto and Barry. I mean, neither of them are up to the job. Have another fucking idea, will you? Play a forward line that goes Tyler George, KDH, Jack Grealish, Dibling, Brennan, because they'll pass the ball to each other and they might do more damage rather than belting it down the pitch and hoping the clodhopper actually gets on the end of it. Have another idea. I fear, and I kind of dread for the season to come, that Moisey hasn't got, he hasn't got the money to go, okay, I'll buy him. And he doesn't seem to have the imagination to know what to do. You're right. If he oscillates between Beto and Barry, we all know what's going to happen. Neither of them,
Neither of them are going to score 20 goals. They might score 20 between them if we're lucky.
So I don't know what he does, but I would like him to show some imagination, and that's what's kind of worrying. I can't see an imaginative solution to a glaring problem.
Agreed.
And he, I mean, well, two or three times last season, you think about who's the best shooter in the club. Well, actually, the best shooter in the club is probably a toss-up between Michael Keane and Jimmy Garner. They seem to me to be the best two shooters of a football. I wouldn't put Barry and Beto in the top. Occasionally they it goes. You know what I mean? I just don't know. I would settle for anything rather than more of the same. More of the same ended with us all feeling really bitter at the end of last season, including the squad and the players. I think they got fed up with the fans and, something desperately needs to be done to bring us all back to being one unit going, we're all here and we're all trying to get there. And I don't know what it is. I certainly, if tomorrow morning Alistair Angus Kinnear went, fuck it, I'm buying the Celtic fullback, live with it, and did, that would make one piece of atmosphere. Quite how you solve the forward problem, I wish I knew. I don't. Except that, You remember the Arsenal Invincibles hardly had a gigantic man in there. They had all sorts of people who liked to pass the ball to each other.
They had footballers.
Nasri and people like, you know, just like, I think we've got those people, Andy. I think if you put out Ndiaye, Grealish, Dybala if he's going to play, Brennan who's got speed, Tyler George, some combination of these, I think that's a lot more frightening to an opposition team than Beto and or Barry, because
Well,
then all I have to do is wait for it to bounce and it's mine.
yeah, for one thing, there'd be no hoof ball up front.
Exactly.
We'd have to play through midfield if we've got the strength in midfield now that we're all beginning to think we do have the options and strength in midfield, then play through midfield and play it forward. And if you need a battering ram for the last 10 minutes, then you can bring Beto on.
We'll find out some more tomorrow night, won't we?
We might well do, yeah. Against a, I mean, New Newcastle. I mean, no Guimaraes, he's gone to Arsenal. No Tonali, he's gone to Spurs. No Gordon, he's tipped up in Barcelona today. You know. That I mean, probably wrong to say that Newcastle look toothless, but they certainly don't look anything remotely as potent as they did at times last season. But Paul will say it's pre-season, it doesn't matter.
Well, you've got a point.
Okay, I'm going to say this now,
There
so,
are.
and it's not going to be, it might be a shock to one or two people, but I doubt it. I have not watched a single moment of Everton pre-season, and I've got no intentions of watching any game before we kick off in the Premier League, because
Right.
it frankly doesn't mean a jot. And as much as the club and whoever it is that we're playing, I mean, whatever Mickey Mouse tournament we might play in pre-season, you know, travel to Singapore or something, play something there, it means absolutely nothing. It's all about preparation for the first game of the Premier League season, and
My accountant. Oh.
frankly, that's when my interest kicks in.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in anything else.
Think that's completely valid. Couldn't agree more. Totally support you. I defend with my life your right to have that opinion. And come 5:15 tomorrow night, I'll be struggling for a stream screaming at it. Looks
Yeah.
bad.
Well, I hear what you say, Paul, about it doesn't matter and it's all about preparation, but
No, it doesn't matter to me,
right.
as what I'm saying.
I was gonna say you might find an argument from the 1,500 or so that went to Stuttgart.
Yeah, but that's their choice.
Yeah.
I can't influence whether they want to go and watch Everton play in some meaningless friendly in Stuttgart, as nice as Stuttgart is. Yeah, if that's the best thing you can do over the weekend, just go and do it. That's fine. But it's got nothing to do at all with what we end up doing in the Premier League season next season.
No, true. But those chickens might come home to roost come 4:45 on the 22nd against Palace.
Yeah, but
Because if the preparation of the games against Dundee and Bolton and Stoke and Hamburg and Stuttgart and Lille to come, and Newcastle obviously tomorrow, results in a boring nil-nil. Or worse, a boring defeat by Palace on the opening day of the season, then questions will be asked about the preparation.
yeah, but I don't believe in any of that. I think over the years, the pre-season, you know, whoever you play, whatever mini tournament you play in, whoever you end up playing in your last game at home before the season kicks off, is a marketing exercise. That's not. It's got nothing at all to do with the preparations of who you're going to put out in the first game of the season. The two things are totally separate. There'll be a group of people run by David Moyes, who says, this is what we want to do on the first game of the season. How do we best achieve that? Well, we best achieve it by doing the following things in the four, five, six games that we've got in pre-season. And we've got a training program and a coaching program around those four, five, six games. That's good. On the marketing side, they say, oh, Everton's tour of Germany, we're going to play the following, the following, the following. Then we're going to come back to Bramley Moor and play whoever, whoever, whoever. I don't even know who we're playing. I don't care. That's a marketing thing. That's how many tickets can we sell? How many views can we get on our website? How much can our sponsors pay us for mentioning them in in those absolutely meaningless games? And I may be the ultimate cynic, but that's how I view it. All of the pre-season prep goes on behind the scenes. It doesn't go on in a friendly.
I'll be watching tomorrow night.
Yeah, I'll be watching tomorrow night.
Just to see where the players are, who what is Norgaard's first touch like? What is Brennan's first touch like? How much courage have they got? How willing are they to put a foot in? I'm so glad Dwight McNeil's gone. Just those kind of things,
But actually, just on the Dwight McNeil
just
transfer,
it's the positivity.
that is a brilliant piece of business by Everton Football Club.
Yeah. Good. Good. I'm thrilled that we've done something good.
Yeah. So if we can do something good in that sense, why the assumption that we can't do something good with everything
Because
else that we've done
John
elsewhere?
has been there for the last 2 years and nothing has been done about it. So the
Yeah, well, last
that
30 odd years, yeah.
created by feeling I'm marking time in the same position. Yes, there are new faces. I'm looking forward to seeing the new faces. The boy from Middlesbrough, who I saw three or four times last season, is a bit good. And he'll make a
Yeah.
difference. He's a motor. And lots of you wish everybody well. But the podcast started and so did the transfer window with the same thing. We need a right back, we need a striker, and we bought all these people and great, good, fine. We need a right back and we need a striker. Excuse me for being a bit pissed off.
I'm going to throw in a qualification that
Widow.
the majority of the podcast said we need a right back. If I was to list like 10 things that we need, right
Yeah.
back would be in the bottom half of those 10 things that we need. And
What would be the
I understand all the reasons why everybody else says, we need a right back. And I'm not in any sense devaluing your opinion of that.
Well,
I think the biggest central need that we have is who the hell is going to score 20 goals a season plus, given how we play and given what's behind that player. I think in terms of what's behind that player, we've massively improved our midfield, and we will have one of the strongest midfields in the Premier League outside the top two or three clubs. The question then becomes whether how is David Moyes going to deploy that midfield? Is he going to deploy it in an offensive sense, or is he going to deploy it in a defensive sense? And then you get into the argument about, well, if we haven't solved the right back problem, and therefore, as a result, we don't have the strongest centre back combination, then he's going to do it from a defensive point of view, which then impacts our ability to score goals. But we won't know that until the season starts. So I find it impossible to get excited or depressive about what happens in the pre-season. It's a bit like writing a book or writing an article. You write the first draft, and then it goes through all the editing process, and it ends up being something totally different. The first draft is important because it's the core base of whatever it is that you want to say, but it's nothing like the finished article. And I think football is similar to that, but the marketing geniuses that exist in football have made pre-season into something that's really important. It's not.
They
Most
haven't.
pre-season games should be played behind closed doors and with no streaming. People, and you'll be the same. Number of people who like DM me, private message me, and say, "Have you got a stream for tonight's game?" And it's some like lousy pre-season game. Frankly, who cares?
They do because they want to
Yeah.
watch their team.
Yeah.
That's all it is, Paul. Sorry. It's not rocket.
So.
Do you think?
The extension of that is, do we want to
Should
watch
you? What?
every training session at
No,
Finch
bore the crap
Farm?
out of me. No, it bore the crap out of me. But my
Yeah.
team are playing tomorrow night, and I want to see how people are linking up. I want to see what the manager is going to try as he makes his plans for Crystal Palace, which is much more important. Everybody knows that. Nobody would rather be in Stuttgart or Hamburg than Crystal Palace. They wouldn't. But the team are playing, so I'm interested. I'm an Evertonian. The fact that you're not is absolutely fine. I perfectly understand it. It's not a problem. Just vive la différence and all that.
Yeah, and me being the type of person I am, I will always argue that my opinion is more important than anybody else's. That's maybe a confession that goes too far in a public podcast,
Never, never have guessed that.
but nevertheless, that is the case. So, if anybody is uncertain about that, you've now got it in the public domain. Yeah. But it gives us plenty of scope to talk on a podcast, and hopefully people will value your opinion, Andy, your opinion, George's, and maybe one or two people might just value my opinion, although they're going to be the contrarians, just as I am and always will be.
I think you're going to be in something of a minority, Paul.
Yeah, I'm quite happy to be in the minority. Really. The one thing that can, the one thing that brings us all together and all Evertonians together is we want to see a, sorry, we want to see a successful football club. And success is not having a good cup run. Success is not finishing sixth, so we're going to be in next year's Europa League. Success is actually seeing whoever the Everton captain might be at the time lifting a piece of silverware.
Correct.
And I don't know when that's next going to happen. We could have like the most extraordinary luck in the Carabao Cup or in the FA Cup, and end up lifting a piece of silverware in either competition. We're not going to win the Premier League. We all know that. So they, therefore, the other two opportunities are the only opportunities that we have. But Crystal Palace achieved that, and Crystal Palace doesn't have the resource that we have, doesn't have the fan base that we have, with the greatest respect to all Crystal Palace supporters. And so it's possible.
Yeah.
But there's no element of luck to that. I personally would like to see the luck element taken away and say, actually, we can compete on fundamentals, not just on luck. But until we do, what happens in pre-season, and which is part of the reason why we haven't spoken and published anything for the last sort of 5, 6, or 7 weeks, is all of this makes no difference at all.
If we win 4-0 tomorrow night,
okay,
the majority of the Everton fan base will feel better than they did before the kickoff. That's the deal with football. And
yeah,
that moment, it won't matter that it was a pre-season friendly. If somebody says to us, was that important? We'll go, no, but my God, it was a glorious relief.
Yeah.
All right. That's...
No, and Andy's absolutely right. If, you know, if we bomb out at Palace, all the wheels fall off and we'll all be back to moaning and groaning like Billy-O, and nobody wants to.
No, that's the thing. None of us want to be moaning and bitching and whinging about things. And that's why we just wish that they'd pull the finger out and address the issues that need to be addressed, whether you prioritise a right back over a striker or a striker over a right back. Just get the frigging job done. Give us something to pin even more hope on.
Yep.
100%. Because at the minute, that's all we've got. You know, we've got some. The squad does look stronger. I'll hold my hands up on that. But this, as you know, for me, the right back issue needs sorting. I think for the majority of Evertonians, the right back issue needs sorting. And for Paul, and I don't think anyone would argue that either. You know, God bless Beto and Barry, but neither of them are going to strike anything like the kind of fear into opposition defences that the likes of a Lukaku or a Lineker or a Rooney or a Latchford or a Joe Royal used to. And that's, you know, if there's one position that Evertonians revere probably more than any, it's the number 9 shirt. It's number 9. And the number 1. Because we've had great centre-forwards and we've had great goalies. So somebody go and find us a new number 9.
I'm busy tomorrow.
Yeah, you're watching the Newcastle Everton game.
I've got the eclipse to deal with after that.
Yeah. Murrayfield will be plunging into darkness.
How many do you think will be there tomorrow? I can't see it being half full.
I've no idea, bro.
Me neither. And I bet the ticket prices are a disgrace.
I think it was about 35 or 40 quid, something like that, cheapest ticket. Which
I presume that's a mark down from what a fan would pay at Crystal Palace, for instance.
I don't know. I mean,
neither. We're burbling.
To me, it means absolutely no difference if there's 5,000 there, 10,000, or 35,000.
No, you're right. It won't affect anything except mood.
Yeah, and it would be nice to get up on Thursday morning in a good mood.
I think, without being too philosophical, there are many other reasons to get up in the morning in a better mood than it is Everton winning some meaningless friendly.
I wouldn't argue that, Paul, but from a football supporter's perspective, you know, who were we playing the night before and did we win? I don't give a shit who we played, but if we've won and we've played, and we've won, then you automatically get up with a bit of a spring in your step.
Okay. All right.
You can't tell me, in all God's honest truth, you cannot tell me that come 8 o'clock tomorrow night or first thing Thursday morning, when you turn the radio on or look at your phone and there's a text message there that says Everton tonked the Toons 6-0, that you're not going to clench your fist, punch the head and go, yes, because you will, because you're an Evertonian. And if you say you won't, you're an out-and-out liar.
If I reverse the argument and say, no, Everton lost 6-0 against Newcastle United,
I'm going to be thoroughly pissed off and call Moyes' head.
I might say FFS.
There you go.
To you, George, and the other Evertonians that I communicate with.
Yeah.
And it'll be a temporary, oh God, what have we done? But then I'll get on with the rest of the day. And I appreciate not everybody can do that. But I also appreciate the fact that, you know, the real stuff doesn't start until the first game of the season. And at the end, I'm pretty sure Moyes will say the same. We're not going to be judged by what we do in August, be it friendlies or be it first games of the season. We're going to be judged by what happens in May next year. And where are we in the league? You can argue that the two are connected, and I think that's a fair argument. And I think,
well, I was just going to say, it would be nice if we actually got off to a flying start for once.
Yeah, yeah. You know, if we won four out of the first five games of the season, and you know we end up on 12 points, then you know it makes the rest of the season so much easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we tonk Newcastle 6-0 in Edinburgh, it means nothing.
No, I don't get me wrong, Paul. I get where you're coming from with that, but I also think that from the players' point of view, you know, if they could have a strong showing tomorrow night and again against Lille on Saturday and play well, actually really play well, and maybe score two or three goals in each game, that's going to boost their confidence going into the Palace game. The games against Newcastle and Lille, in all honesty, you're right, they mean jack shit. But in terms of preparation, it's about boosting confidence, surely to God. And I want them to go out against Palace on the 22nd, all walking out of that tunnel, feeling 8 feet tall and looking at Palace as though to say, you've picked the wrong day to come here, you lot.
Yeah.
And then go out and do the business again and do it properly. And get the crowd behind them right from the very start and get on the front foot from the start. Get in front and stay in front. That's the biggest thing for me, is we have got to, for this coming season, okay, setting aside all the other crap we've talked about, Everton Football Club have got to start taking the game to their opponents and taking it to them hard and fast, right from the off.
Not going to happen.
And why won't it happen?
Because the coach doesn't think like that.
Well, the coach has to go then. And we need a coach who will play football on the front foot. Because I'm fed up of this. I'm fed up of us being second best, chasing games far too often. far too often at home last season, we were chasing games. And it's got to stop. I want us to, I said this to someone the other day, that there's a, and Paul alluded to it before, you know, there's a whole generation of Evertonians have never seen an Everton captain lift a piece of silverware. And if we don't do something to correct that, then there might not be another generation of Evertonians to come along.
This has been,
and I think the first step on the road to securing another generation of Evertonians is to play aggressive, attractive, attacking football. And if we can't do it under this manager, then find another manager. Because people are not going to put up with another season of certainly disappointing is the best word I can use at the moment, home form, with the odd fleeting glimpse of what the side could do. The 3-0 tonking of Chelsea, the, you know, we led City 3-1 and then let them back in. You know, there was fleeting moments last season, and the away form was probably the biggest bonus we've had for a while. But I don't want it to be a bonus. I want it to be the norm. I want us to play football and generate some excitement. The crowd need to be on the feet all the way through the game, not just periodically. I don't think Bramley Moore has become anything remotely like the intimidating venue that everyone hoped it would be. It's a smashing venue. It looks fantastic. You know, everyone says it looks great. Bit of a bitch to get to and from, particularly on a rainy day or a rainy evening. But I don't think it's become the bear pit that we want it to be. And well, one way for it to become the bear pit we want it to be, and for every visiting team to be intimidated, is if the team in blue go out and attack and go out and do it for 90 minutes. That's what I want to see. I want to see Everton on the front foot. We won't win every game. We know that. But for God's sake, go for it and give us some excitement, for Christ's sake. Too many people are saying that games are boring. I don't want to watch boring football no longer. I want to watch Everton football play football. On the front foot, attacking. And if this manager can't do it, get a new one.
Fair play.
Thank you. That's my pre-season rant over.
Good man. All right. I'm going to call time here because we've been...
No comeback, eh? Hey?
Oh, there's plenty of comeback. But I think the secret here is to keep it and get people listening to the next episode of Talking
All right, fair enough.
Rather than listening to 90 minutes or 120 minutes or whatever it might be. It's been a great conversation. Three quite different views. And, you know, we all want the same thing, but we're all coming at it from a slightly different perspective. Who's right, who's wrong will only be known when we see what the results are. Mm-hmm. But, from a personal perspective, I am to blame for this. So, just so everybody knows, nobody else is. I've missed this type of conversation. It's been great, and it will continue.
Yep, fair enough.
Yep. So, everybody who's listening, thank you so much for listening, and
enjoy the eclipse.
Yeah.
As we
Is
eclipse the two.
this a total eclipse of the heart? Was that George? You're going to help me out here. Was that Bonnie Tyler?
Bonnie Tyler.
Ah, there you go. All right. Well, look, on that note, let's and actually, I think I read the other day that the next near total eclipse is.
2090.
Jeez. Okay. Well, if we've not won a trophy between now and then, we
Don't
are
be
in.
old there, for God's sakes.
We're and whatever talking the blues becomes in in that time, it's unlikely that the three of us will be here to present it. But if we are, then we can continue the conversation. In the meantime, been great fun. Thank you so much for listening.